Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Jackson Hewitt.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. A vigil is held in Louisville, Kentucky to honor those killed in Monday morning's bank shooting. It came after authorities released tapes of the emergency calls, which some may find disturbing. CBS's Roxana Saberi.
911 calls are chilling. The first one from a woman who watched remotely on a video call as the shooter opened fire on a board meeting at the bank.
This video is still going. Oh my God, there's no, I can't see anything now except for the ground.
Then a woman inside the bank calls cautiously as she hides in a closet with another person.
8 or 9 people have been shot. I'm in a closet hiding. That shot's fired.
Heavy rain in Florida prompts the National Weather Service to issue a flash flood emergency for areas near Hollywood, Dania Beach, and Fort Lauderdale. An industrial fire that started in Richmond, Indiana yesterday is contained but still burning, and hundreds are still under an evacuation order. State Fire Marshal Steve Jones.
We're not generating near the smoke that we did yesterday, and we're gradually being able to make some headway in knocking down the fire.
The EPA is doing some monitoring. This resident saying,
I am a little concerned with, you know, what kind of chemicals are in the air, because I know there was a lot of plastic in that facility. So, like, what are we breathing in right now?
Another reported launching of a ballistic missile by North Korea. Reporter Alex Jensen in Seoul.
According to South Korea's military, North Korea fired an intermediate range or longer ballistic missile, possibly the kind of weapon the North would be developing with the U.S. in mind. But Japan felt the immediate threat, initially warning residents on the island of Hokkaido to take cover, though that concern did prove to be unfounded.
After marking 25 years since the Good Friday Agreement, President Biden connects with his family heritage in Ireland. CBS's Stephen Portnoy is there.
Speaking at a pub in the quaint Irish town of Dundalk, the president said he knows his ancestors left this country due to the potato famine of the mid-1800s.
When you're here, you wonder why anyone would ever want to leave.
Biden said coming here feels like coming home.
My Grandpa Finney would also say every time we walked out, when we talk about background and heritage, you go, remember, Joey, the best drop of blood in you is Irish.
Stephen Portnoy, CBS News with the president in Ireland.
Firefighters in New Jersey are battling wildfires in the northwest and southeast. WCBS-TV's Christine Sloan in Manchester Township.
Officials don't know how the fire started, but they know where the fire started, on military property at Joint Base McGuire. They also say it had the potential of being catastrophic. But thanks to firefighters, no injuries and no property damage.
This is CBS News.
Taxes are due. Have you filed yet? Don't worry. Jackson Hewitt is racking up the assists. They will get you filed or an extension before the deadline. Beat the crowds by going to Jackson Hewitt.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Mantner. Here's what you need to know. Some good news for Wisconsin. The state has regained most of the population it lost since 2020, with some areas doing better than others. The population of Milwaukee County continues falling. The Madison area continues to grow. Recent numbers from the Census Bureau show that Vilas and Burnett counties also saw gains. However, since 2020, deaths in Wisconsin continue outpacing births, and the number of deaths related to COVID-19 exceeding 16,000. The EPA on Wednesday out with new proposed limits on vehicle emissions, requiring 2/3 of all new car and pickup truck sales and 1/4 of heavy-duty trucks sold to be electric by 2032. Last year, EVs made up nearly 6% of new car sales across the U.S. Meanwhile, Wisconsin Republican lawmakers introducing legislation to prevent state and local governments from barring the sale of vehicles based on their energy source. I'm Jane Mantner. This is Civic Media News.
Direct from the Dairy State, it's Extra Sharp Weekends, a 3-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn block. Extra Sharp Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media Station or on the app.
Milwaukee. You have to check out Mob Craft Beer, the world's first crowdsourced brewery, where they turn your ideas into beer. Stop in their downtown tap room to try flagships, seasonals, limited release crowdsourced brews that you won't find anywhere else, and more. Mob Craft also has a pizza kitchen making craft pies with the freshest ingredients. And enjoy their amazing tap room, featuring over 20 constantly rotating draft lines, indoor and outdoor seating on their dog-friendly patio, and a killer view of the Milwaukee skyline. Mob Craft Beer, located in the heart of Walker's Point in Milwaukee. For more info, head to mobcraftbeer.com.
Are you an experienced industrial painter, drywall finisher, or want to be? Do you want more than a job, but a high-paying career where your interests are well-represented, ensuring a safe work environment? The International Union of Painters and Allied Trades of District Council 7 wants you. Bring your knowledge or ask about paid training. Learn more now. Call Tom Coyne, 262-488-4839, 262-488-4839, or go to the union's website, iupatdc7.com.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM. Franklin's choice for news talk radio.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, we've been talking about this this Fortune magazine article that cited this Albert Edwards guy, this economist over at Societe Generale, this French bank, that's saying, hey, look, things are bad. And things are so bad that he came up with the word greedflation, something we've used here on the program, quite often, and pointed out, look, the markup value that's going on, these corporations who are making unimaginable profits and sticking it to consumers and workers, it's not sustainable. And his suggestion at the time was, price controls never going to happen here, maybe in other countries. And as we talked about on Monday, there are some places where it might work. Doubt it happens here. But you look at this and you compare this with our bad tax policy and our bad economic policies. How do we move forward? That's why I've asked Bobby Kogan to come talk with us. Bobby's the Senior Director of Federal Budget Policy at the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org is their website. Bobby, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, I am happy to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
So I'm sure you've seen this article with this economist who's saying, look, things are bad, and it's unsustainably bad. As people are struggling, as families are having a much harder time to make ends meet. We saw, reports out today, 39% of people are missing meals to pay their rent or their mortgage. Things are tough out there. You agree with that?
Things are definitely tough out there for a lot of people. I would say that we're the richest country in history, and it's really, really, really unacceptable that there are still so many people struggling, and it's on us to make sure that we are doing more to help people.
Now, we're in this weird place because it's almost like now we're paralyzed to get anything done. And, people are struggling. When you see egg prices go through the roof, but they're still on the shelf, something's broken. And our politics are definitely part of that. Is there a way to move us in a direction that reunites us or I'm curious your thinking.
I wish I were a better political prognosticator, but I'm not sure I have a good guess about the future for how we get out of this. A lot of, the political scientists will say that we are at partisanship not seen since the lead up to and the aftermath of the Civil War. That's not my area of expertise. I was an idiot and I studied math instead of politics. But I trust what the experts say, and obviously, you see it among the people you talk to.
Yeah, what I'm trying to get to is, policy-wise, there's a lot I think we could and should be doing. But every time something's proposed, you go, hey, we're broke because, we don't have any money because we spent it all because we've got this huge debt. And you guys have just come out with a piece saying, who's responsible for our increase in debt? And this is one of those moments where this should be just math, as you pointed out, because I've had these arguments with people. There are folks who believe that the $1,400 that Joe Biden gave out, for people to put food on the table, that caused all this inflation and ran up our debt and did all these things. When the reality is, it's been the tax cut fetish for my entire life that's caused this. And your piece walks through some of that.
Yeah. So actually, I want to quickly respond to your first point and then jump into my piece. The Congressional Budget Office is kind of the neutral arbiter of all things budget and economic for Congress. They work for Congress, and they're kind of this independent source. And they have an estimate, essentially, of where the economy could be running versus where it is running. And they think that that's the potential is where we could be. They think we were below potential, even kind of with all of this. So if you ask them, we didn't overstimulate the economy. So there isn't really good evidence that inflation was caused by this big buildup or anything. But to your point now to this piece, so I just put out a piece. I'm really, really, really happy about it. It is my attempt to look at how we got to the debt situation that we're in, which is that, as I said, the Congressional Budget Office is kind of the neutral arbiter of all things budget. And they used to show us on track to have debt declining as a percent of the economy forever. And now they show debt on track to increase as a percent of the economy for forever. And my paper is an attempt to explain what changed. How do we get from a point of debt going down for forever to debt going up for forever? And the answer is really large, repeated, regressive tax cuts that went overwhelmingly to the rich and to large corporations. They went to a lot of people, but overwhelmingly, disproportionately, they went to the really well-off. To date, you know, my papers, my calculations is that they cost $10 trillion up till now. So as soon as someone says, oh, what about this? How do we have money for this? Well, we just did, $10 trillion worth of tax cuts this century, just these tax cuts. Obviously, we've actually done a bunch more, but just these ones are $10 trillion to date, and they're going to cost a bunch more in the future. How much more? The answer is they enough are the difference between stable debt and debt going up for forever. If you just don't do them, if you turn them off, or if you just never did them, that would be declining for forever. They're enough for debt to be going up forever. So that's step one. It's just like it's just math. I ran the formulas myself. They're enough. And so then you get to the next point where you say, well, why do they have the entire blame? And the answer is that, remember I said we used to be on track for debt to be going down for forever? If you go and you compare where we are now to then, spending is down relative to that, not up. So all the people who are talking about runaway spending, it's true, spending is going up in any given year, but that the track that it's on is on a lower track than it used to be. So if you ask the Congressional Budget Office, they'd say spending is decreasing debt, not increasing relative to the last time. So that's it. Not only is revenue, not only are these tax cuts bigger than everything, spending went in the opposite direction. So those two things together is why I would say that I think a fair assessment would say that these tax cuts that overwhelmingly went to the rich and profitable corporations are doing all the lifting here.
So I'm getting you right, because I want people to understand what you're saying here. About $10 trillion in the Bush tax cuts, the Trump tax cuts, and all of that all along. So when someone tells me, sorry, we can't have early, pre-K, and we can't have, college for people, and we can't, have health care, and we really can. We've just prioritized not.
Right. We prioritize not. And so they're $10 trillion to date, but, they're another, I can't remember now off the top of my head, because I ended up not including this in the paper, but they're on track to be like another $8 trillion over this coming decade as well. Maybe $10 trillion, I can't remember, but that's more than the entire size. That's like more than twice the President Biden's entire BBB agenda that didn't happen, right? All the pre-K, the paid leave, the child care, you name it. Like, it's more than twice that as these tax cuts going forward in the next decade. So yes, we have plenty of money. We've just prioritized it poorly.
Yeah, no, but here's this frame, and I keep getting this, and I go back to my Tea Party friends. They were running around going, we're taxed enough already. We're the highest taxed country in the world, Bobby. Don't you know that? We're taxed more than anybody else.
Yeah, so that's a fun one. We are not the highest taxed country in the world. And not only are we not the highest taxed country in the world, we're nowhere near the highest taxed country in the world. So OECD countries, it's kind of a weird one. Some people call them like rich nations. It's kind of a weird setup. But basically, if you look at like the economically advanced nations of the world, you look at these 38 countries, the U.S. is ranked 32 out of 38, where one is the highest tax, 38 is the lowest tax. We're ranked 32 out of 38. We are nowhere near average. And when you say we're nowhere near average, what does that mean in the dollar terms we're used to? So when you hear like a cost of something, oh, this costs this much money or whatever, we're used to hearing a 10-year cost estimate. And so one of the things I actually did in my paper is I put how far away from average we are in these 10-year terms. And so we're the equivalent of $26 trillion in lower taxes than the average rich nation and $36 trillion below the average EU nation. So we're not only not close, we're not only not the highest, we're nowhere close to the average.
So when I hear my Tea Party friends say that I believe in redistribution of wealth, and I retort with, yes, I would like it redistributed the way it used to be, right. I would be correct.
Yeah, you'd be correct. We have had a series of very expensive tax cuts just going back and back and back, right? So my paper starts with President Reagan, and his first tax cut was the biggest tax cut in U.S. history, in all of U.S. history. President Reagan, 1981, was the biggest one. They're really proud of that. But what you actually don't hear was that was such a big tax cut that President Reagan spent the next, like, every year of his, almost every year of his administration doing tax increases, because even the Republicans were balking at his big deficits. And even then, with increasing taxes basically every single year for the rest of his administration, he was left with the equivalent of a $10 trillion tax cut, if you kind of put it in today's terms, which is just kind of monumental. So you have that's a giant tax cut, you know, and then there was an increase under George H.W. Bush, and there was an increase under Clinton, and then there were huge tax cuts under George Bush, and then there were huge tax cuts again under President Trump. And, you know, you get these mini increases along the way, but by and large, we just have repeated tax cuts. And those things are what's doing all the heavy lifting here. Yeah. They make us a low tax country and they make us a high deficit country.
No, and it's interesting because, you know, and I've had this conversation a million times. Yeah, they don't tax you, but they fee you to death. One of the things that Reagan did that I'll never forget. Is, you know, they began for the first time taxing unemployment insurance. So all those working people who during the pandemic had to collect unemployment because they couldn't work, and you got slapped in the face again with a tax on that, you can thank Ronald Reagan for that.
Yeah, so that is actually, that gets to, right, I said there were tax increases, that gets to actually the interesting trend, which is that you do really big big tax cuts that go disproportionately to the extremely well off. And then you do some tax increases that kind of maybe hit the middle class and the poorer folks, and you do some spending cuts. And since the most of what the government does is spending directly on people, you end up doing expensive tax cuts for the rich, offset partially by spending cuts that come from the poor and by tax increases on the middle class. That has basically been the long-term trend. And it has made, while it's true, we have a pretty, you know, all things together, like our system does, you know, does a lot of redistribution. The net effect of this change has to make it less and less and less redistributive over time. In some ways, I mean, we do more kind of at the very bottom in some ways, but it's the general trend is to have a lower kind of Gini pull, Gini coefficient pull.
So how is it that narrative, that thing that you just said, isn't understood by the vast majority of people? And I look at when Mitt Romney was governor of Massachusetts, you know, he ran on, I'm never going to raise your taxes. And he didn't. He didn't raise people's taxes. He just feed them to death. You know, every fee saw an increase, which I would argue is a tax. You know, the other day I talked about our trash bill. That used to be part of our taxes. Now I have to pay a private company with enforcement from the local township to pick up my trash. It's not a tax, but it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cost that you have to bear. And this is why it's actually really interesting. So this actually came up in the Medicare for All debate when people were saying, oh, well, if you impose Medicare for All, that really increases government spending and government taxes. And like, that's true, but it is then getting rid of spending and payments that were happening in the private sector. It is just shifting those from the private sector over to the government. And so on the flip side, if you're shifting the government ones over to the private sector, it's not as if I, an individual, am better off just because instead of having to pay the government, I have to pay a private service. It works the same way for me.
So is there a way back? I guess the last question I've got is, you know, is there, you know, I often argue that we should be returning to the good old days of socialist President Dwight David Eisenhower. Now I know that's never going to happen. But, you know, having a progressive tax code where those who have have the means should be contributing a little bit more, and we shouldn't be saddling a generation with massive student loan debt. Families shouldn't be bankrupt with healthcare costs and such. There's a way to do this to where, you know, everyone is better off. I just fear we're never going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, we were really hopeful. I was working in the administration at the time that IRA or that BBB failed and then died and then turned into IRA, and obviously a lot of the taxes fell out of that. I would say we were really close. To doing a large tax increase on very profitable corporations and on very well-off people, right? It would have adhered to the Biden pledge of 400K, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we ended up not getting it. But it was very easy to see how if a few elections had turned out very slightly differently, then we would be having a different conversation. And it would say, wow, goodness, we'd still be an incredibly low tax country, but instead of being 32, maybe we'd be 31 or something, you know? So I'd say I'm a forever optimist. I believe that we can do it. We've had a lot of failures of the government along the way. And we've also had a lot of successes. We do more to lift people out of poverty than any time in history. And that is outstanding. And I would say that during the Biden administration with the CARES, which was bipartisan under Trump, and then with the American Rescue Plan, you put those together and we saw poverty decrease in a recession. That speaks to what can be done. And I would just say that we have a lot of bad trends in the country, but we also have a lot of good trends, and you only have to win once and then we get it in there. So
no, because I think it's important for my Tea Party friends, and I try to remind them as often as possible, you know, the good socialist President Eisenhower, the top marginal tax rate was 92% back then.
Yeah.
Corporate taxes were up in the 50% range. We're nowhere near that now, are we?
And we're nowhere near that. And we're at 37, right? And the other thing that I would say about good socialist Eisenhower is that he also created disability insurance, right? So he was out there creating new programs to help needy people. There's a lot that could be done and needs to be done and has been done on a bipartisan basis in the past. The one other thing that I'd be remiss if I didn't say, Eisenhower also appointed Brennan to the Supreme Court, and he, you know, might be the best, you know, best Supreme Court justice of all time ever. So a lot of good things came there.
If only we could dig Ike up. But Bobby, I appreciate your time and your thoughts. I hope folks will check out the piece. We'll get links out on social media. Folks can look at the piece that you've got out. Tax cuts are primarily responsible for increasing debt ratio. By our friends over at the Center for American Progress. Bobby Kogan, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick. Take care.
Thanks so much. Again, AmericanProgress.org, the website, if you want to take a look at the work that they do. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, an interesting piece over at Rolling Stone. I find it interesting that the right had lost their mind over Budweiser and the transgender can or the rainbow can. We'll go with that. And it's interesting. A bunch of people ran out just so they could pour it down the drain. That's what I love about some of these right-wing boycotts. They go, they buy the product so they could destroy it. which again, you will help them long term. But it's interesting, you know, that they have the frame get woke, go broke, and yet the reality is a lot of these companies who the right wing have targeted have actually done better. You remember the whole Keurig thing, you know, the which I guess was the, you know, was the first kind of trial, and I don't even remember it. Someone had to explain it to me that because I don't drink coffee, but it was during the Roy Moore era when Moore was running for Senate, and my friend Doug Jones beat him in that race. That evidently Keurig pulled ads from Sean Hannity's show, and then there was this whole to do, and then there were people throwing their Keurigs off the balcony and smashing stuff. And look, Keurig's doing just fine. In fact, they bought Dr. Pepper. There was a huge buyout to where this Keurig Green Mountain Company acquired Dr. Pepper Snapple Group for what? I think it was like almost $19 billion in 2018. They've had gross, you know, profits that are, you know, just through the roof. You go, I think it's actually helping them. Now, when this came out, the rich guy, John Rich, I think his name is, country singer, he said, I'm going to stop serving this at my restaurant. And I said, look, you know, the reality is these companies have done their market research. They've done their research. They've investigated, you know, how this stuff works out. And they've realized that you don't matter. That the handful of people who are going to do this kind of dumb stuff, this performative stuff, don't matter because you're probably not buying the product anyway. And this is, according to the Rolling Stone piece, this has really borne out. They did the same thing with United Airlines. Carhartt, I found it interesting as I was reading through the article that, you know, Seb Gorka was all up in arms and said he's never going to buy a Carhartt product. And I'm like, really? Sebastian, have you ever done an honest day's labor? That you would need a Carhartt? Seriously? but the boycott Carhartt did not work. They've been wildly profitable. In fact, their workers, you know, I found this out. Their workers make over $43 an hour. How do I get that job? It doesn't sound broke to me. And you look at what DeSantis is doing in Florida going after Disney. It's kind of crazy. You know, Marjorie Trainwreck, she's, you know, going after him too. And yet, oddly enough, their gross profits went up 27% last year. They're doing better. Nike, same thing. Evidently, Nike is teaming with this Dylan Mulroney, I guess her name is. Mulvaney. And, okay, you remember the last time they boycotted Nike? You know, people were ripping the swooshes off their shoes and they were, you know, they're doing nothing but making money. My favorite all time is listening to right-wingers say that they're going to boycott the NFL. You know, they're not standing for the pledge and the NFL has done nothing but make money. Now you can complain about the game and the purity of the game, which, you know, I do as well. But the reality is in-person attendance is through the roof. They've got massive TV contracts. They're doing just fine. Now, this is the part that bothers me, because corporations are now doing this kind of market research, and the right has been doing this for years. You know, I look at the Chick-fil-A people who have, you know, they've staked their political ground knowing that the evangelical crowd is going to be a good base, and they're okay with that, and it's lucrative for them. Is this how business is going to be? And I would argue this came out of that bakery in Colorado. You know, you won't sell the cake to the gay couple. Now we start having to boycott corporations. And it's interesting to watch this whole thing play out, because again, what it's really about, what I've been saying from the beginning, it's about keeping us pitted against each other. It's about dividing us, tearing us apart so that we don't demand $43 an hour to work at Carhartt. I mean, now, that's a job, one that we should all be going, how do we get one of those? How do we get, you know, a job with decent health care? How do we get a job with decent dental plans? How do we get a job that pays a living wage? You know, how do we get, you know, a safe career job? We should be talking about that, but we're not. and you look at the numbers, we're struggling. And I'm hoping it doesn't take a major catastrophe to bring us together. I'm hoping not another major depression, nothing horrible like a world war. Can we just stop? Maybe. Want to hear your thoughts.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shah 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
CBS News Brief. Louisville mourns the Old National Bank shooting victims during a vigil as the city releases 911 calls that some may find disturbing.
Hi, I'm at 333 East Main Street. We have an active shooter.
The fire that sparked evacuations in Richmond, Indiana, that are still in place, is contained but not extinguished. This resident saying,
everybody else close their windows and everything and get your pets in, and that's exactly what we did.
South Korea's military says North Korea fired an intermediate-range or longer ballistic missile. Japan warned residents on the island of Hokkaido to take cover. The concern proved to be unfounded. E-cigarette maker Juul agrees to a $462 million settlement with six states and the District of Columbia. New York Attorney General Letitia James says of the company's marketing campaigns,
Juul's lies led to a nationwide public health crisis and put addictive products in the hands of minors who thought they were doing something harmless.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shah 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin says she's running for re-election next year. The Madison Democrat is seeking a third six-year term in the U.S. Senate. No one's yet officially announced they're running against Baldwin. Governor Reivers wants to use some of the state's $7 billion surplus to help unpaid home caregivers. His budget would provide $195 million in tax relief to about 240,000 people over 2 years.
It's not a Republican or Democratic issue. It's not whether I'm a Democrat or a Republican. It's a priority.
More on Civic Media's Empowered Caregivers tonight at 7. In sports, the Brewers and Diamondbacks play the rubber match of their series in Arizona today. The Bucks begin playoff action at home Sunday. They'll take on either Miami, Toronto, or Chicago. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Milwaukee, you have to check out Mobcraft Beer,
the world's first crowdsourced brewery,
where they turn your ideas into beer. Stop in their downtown tap room to try flagships, seasonals, limited release crowdsourced brews that you won't find anywhere else, and more. Mobcraft also has a pizza kitchen making craft pies with the freshest ingredients. And enjoy their amazing tap room, featuring over 20 constantly rotating draft lines, indoor and outdoor seating on their dog-friendly patio, and a killer view of the Milwaukee skyline. Mobcraft Beer, located in the heart of Walker's Point in Milwaukee.
For more info, head to mobcraftbeer.com.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
We stand on the shoulders of women who came before us.
Women who fought for their own financial futures.
And now it's our turn.
Join us. Visit WeSaySaveIt.org and take control of your financial future by saving for retirement.
A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, House Democrats are calling on Dianne Feinstein to resign. One of those things where, at some point, Gotta go. Now, evidently, the claim is that she's had shingles. Was going to come back, I guess, at the end of March was the comment. There's a point where you go, you know, I think it's time to go enjoy the golden years. Go do something else. This is one of those moments. Just one of those moments. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Maybe got an opinion on the Feinstein thing. I've asked our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So what do you think? Is it time for Senator Feinstein to move aside, finally?
Well, but here's the thing. Yes, most likely. But what needs to happen is very simple. They need to, right now, appoint somebody else to the Judiciary Committee. And then she goes off Judiciary. Then she, you know, if she sits there and doesn't resign, you know, that's, you know, one thing. Other people have missed roll call votes. You see what I mean? It's hard to just say, okay, she needs to resign because she's missed roll call votes. Now, there's a reason, of course, why they want her to resign, and that reason is simple. She's holding up her presence on Judiciary, holds up all the appointments.
Right.
So the solution for tomorrow morning is for her to get off of Judiciary Committee. The Senate is sort of more like a peacock farm than the House. We used to call it the peacock farm, in the sense that, you know, in the House, I think they would have said, okay, we're going to take you off this committee. In the Senate, they want her to acquiesce herself, you know.
Yeah, that's never going to happen.
No. So that's the instant solution to this. She leaves Judiciary Committee tomorrow morning. Then if she doesn't show up, you know, that's different. You can't expel her for not showing up because people miss roll call votes. So, but I agree. It's time to, you know, I don't know why. Well, how old is she? 87?
Yeah, something 80, like that. I mean,
87, 89. And she's, 89. You know, missed all this time. Why do you want, you know, just go ahead and go.
Can we have a Senate emeritus position or something like
what
that?
What time you have remaining.
Exactly. Go do something you like.
Right. Strom Thurmond, remember?
Oh. Yeah, I do. What was he, 101 before they wheeled him out of there?
Real quick, you know how I met him?
How?
I was at an event. He was putting carrots and celery in his pocket, wrapping them in napkins. He used to do that. You know, you have the finger food at these meet and greets. And
what?
There was
Hold on. Whoa. Stop. He was taking the celery and carrots? Didn't have any back at the home front?
Yeah, he took the celery. This is how I met him. He was taking celery and carrots and wrapping them in a napkin. This is a meet and greet, like the Realtors Group, National Realtors Association, whatever, you know. And he was taking them and wrapping them in a napkin. Then he would put them in his suit pocket. And so I was standing there, and there was this young guy, and he was standing sort of like right next to him. And I thought, what's that guy doing? It's almost like he's listening to Thurmond, you know?
Yeah.
And I walked over, and I go, hello, who are you? Because I thought, you know, what are you doing? And he said, oh, hi, Congressman, I'm with Senator Thurmond. And he was his body man.
Yeah.
He had to watch what did Thurmond say. He led him out of the room. Thurmond didn't know what planet he was on. That's how I met him. He didn't know. But they kept him there.
Yeah.
You know? This is the Senate. I mean, it's just like, you know, he didn't want to go or he didn't know he wanted to go. So he was there. So he wrapped up carrots and celery and had a good time.
Yeah, well, if that's the most damage he would do, I'm not against it. But, you know, I wasn't a huge fan of Strom Thurmond, so.
Right, right.
It is what it is. Wow, that's. So what, did he take him back and eat him later? Was that the, I mean, because my mind is going, this is a guy who had a lot of money. He was well off.
Now, you're from, you know, Pennsylvania. Have you not been to weddings where, the Polish weddings, right?
Yeah,
where they
that.
Beat the
I've been to my family's weddings. They do it too. They
right.
bring the Tupperware. I get that.
They beat the pan, and people put money in, and then all the women take cookies from the cookie table, and they wrap them in napkins, and they put them in their purse. They take them home.
I get that, but this guy's a U.S. senator.
Thurman.
You don't have somebody to bring you a carrot?
He might have been to a Polish wedding and, and did that. I can start giving you more stories. I mean, I've got a lot of them that we don't go over that I've seen. That's a true one.
You've officially broken my wife now with the carrot stories.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Are you done?
Yeah. No, I could tell one in the White House with him and one of my staffers. I could tell that one.
Oh, please do.
Okay. We were at the White House later. This is later on. And I had a staffer, and she was, very prim and proper. I mean, extremely. She would say, spell out a little cuss word or something. And she said, there's Senator Thurman. I would love to have a picture. And I said, okay. And we went and took a picture, and afterwards she came over to me and said, Congressman, when that picture was taken, he put his hand near my buttocks. And she spelt buttocks. Yes, I said that's Senator Thurman, yes.
Yeah. The old Fred Sanford thing, he'll be a dirty old man until he's a dead old man. Is that where that went?
And he probably took celery from the White House, too, so.
Okay.
Anything else?
No. I think you've done enough.
Mm-hmm. Senator Feinstein, if she keeps going, might be wrapping celery soon. It's a Senate thing, Yes, it's time for her to go.
You got to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's completely, completely derailed the whole segment. Let's get back on track. Are you okay over there? Deep breath. Breathe with us. I wanted to get your thoughts on to change topics and get away from carrots and celery.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about something else that's orange. Evidently, Trump's possibly going to have some actual problems with with this special counsel, Jack Smith. I was getting your thoughts on, evidently now they're probing into his fundraising after the 2020 election because they're, for the false claims of fraud and all of this stuff. Is this possibly another investigation that we don't know about, or is this part of the whole January 6th thing?
I think it's part of the January 6th thing. And then some of, this will be under the jurisdiction, they'll have to go through, the campaign FEC committee, Fair Elections Commission committee, to see what, rules have been violated or whatever. But I think part of it would be over January the 6th. The prosecutor in New York is going to have some particular problems when it comes to trying to invoke federal law when it comes to the campaign, because some of this is under the Federal Elections Commission, and if they haven't ruled on it, he's going to have a little bit of trouble trying to go, into that arena of the campaign finance law and what's been broken on the federal level. I think.
Have you seen that the House Republicans are moving a piece of legislation to try and bar local prosecutors from going after Trump? Have you seen this?
Yes, it's out. It's absolutely outrageous, because here's what they're doing, and Jim Jordan, has talked on this. They're trying to basically say that you can't prosecute if somebody is a federal official. The states would be barred from doing what Bragg is doing in New York. And if you want to talk about states' rights and conservatives and Jim Jordan, doesn't this kind of go counter to everything? Everything that Jordan stands for when it comes to states' rights, all of a sudden we'll say, well, if it's a federal candidate, you cannot convene a grand jury on a federal candidate because it's a, quote, federal issue. Here's the problem with that in the Trump case. Trump did not break federal law, and this prosecutor is stepping in going, oh, here I've got jurisdiction over federal law. The prosecutor is using accounting law, I'm going to call it, for New York and businesses of what he will call a felony or not, based on breaking New York law. He did not do this based on breaking the Federal Election Commission law, but breaking New York accounting law. So Jordan is trying to say, et al. Are trying to say, nobody can ever, you know, convene a grand jury if they're a federal official. And it first of all, flies in the face of you know, what Jordan should stand for as a ultra-conservative. Number two, it's never even going to pass the House itself under the Republicans.
Yeah, I love the fact that they brought it up, though. I love the fact they brought it up.
Well, yes, but it didn't even make sense to how they feel about states' rights. And plus, Jordan's getting too much into, obviously, what a state can do or not with its judicial system, with its court system, with its prosecutorial system. On the other hand, I think Bragg is potentially making a mistake on filing a lawsuit on Jordan. I think that he kind of took the bait, and yes, he can file the lawsuit, but it's now going to go into the branches of discovery, which lawsuits do, and then they're going to want, you know, the emails when the two other deputy prosecutors work for him, and, you know, on and on and on. That's what happens in courts of law.
And let the fun begin.
Right.
Let the fun begin.
It'll be lawsuit for lawsuit, eye for eye.
Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're with former Ohio Congressman and political analyst Bob Ney. I wanted to get your thoughts on this story finally. I know you spent a little time in prison. There's this story coming out of Indiana, and I'm sure you've seen this. This guy, Joshua McLemore, I guess his name is, in 3 weeks dropped 45 pounds, died of dehydration and starvation while in custody. And they've got all this on video. Something like 480 hours of footage of this guy in this cell, basically just tortured with no interaction whatsoever from the officials. And it kind of looks almost exactly like the story that came out of Arkansas at the beginning of the year with this Larry Price guy who dropped from 185 pounds down to 90 pounds because they left him in a jail cell for, I forget what it was. It was some outrageous couple months, I think it was. Something completely outrageous. What the hell's going on?
Well, with this guy, he lost 45 pounds during his stay. He never saw a doctor, a mental health professional, or anything. You know, they have a lawsuit out with it. There was a man with schizophrenia, and he was, you know, never saw a doctor, was left, in the cell. We had a guy in Morgantown Federal Corrections, and I remember he was from Cleveland, Ohio, and he had his right leg was purple on half of it, and he had MRSA, and they had not treated him, and he finally fell out, which is institutional talk for, you know, passed out in his bunk. And he fell out, and they took him to the hospital. When he came back, he had, and I'm sorry, this is kind of a crude story, but he had open, you know, visible sores and things on his leg. And he would use the bathroom and the shower area, and there were no cleaning products for our showers. You just used this spray water and stuff because, I don't know, somebody wouldn't inhale them. I don't forget the reasoning to it. And so we took turns, all of us in the unit, to find out where he showered, so that nobody would use that shower right afterwards, because, you know, he had MRSA.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's just one example. I'll give you a personal example. I am missing my lower right back tooth, and it started to come loose, and I wanted some, we had no dental, and I know what everybody says, they get free dental care, they get, you know, we had no dental care at all, and so my tooth was in agony, and I asked, stupidly, I asked if, you know, my family could pay, and I could go to the local dentist, and they said, oh, no, we'd have to take you in shackles. We would have to have six people. The optics of letting you out to get your tooth fixed would not be good, is what they told me. So I chewed on something until eventually the pain subsided after 30 or 40 days, and I took aspirin, and when I got out, I had the tooth pulled, you know. So these are just examples of what really happens. Now, nobody watches, like when you lose weight in there or you're doing things or you're put in solitary, for example, nobody necessarily watches you or says, how are you doing? We had the ability to go, I remember one time, you know, for mental health, to go talk to this guy who literally walked around and talked to trees. He seriously talked to trees, and we were all like, you got to be kidding me. He was like out of his gourd. And, you know, I could go on and on and on about it. If you had a problem, good luck. You know, you had to basically fall out, which is passing out or dying, and some people did, before anybody would really particularly pay attention. It's just, it's terrible. And I got out of prison, and I talked to some colleagues of mine, and nobody seemed to be kind of really willing to do what they need to do. Take a prison tour, but if you take a prison tour, you know, take somebody in there or have them like me, somebody like me that knows what's in there on the inside of the system, because otherwise they'll take members of Congress, you know, on a tour that'll be like, oh, here's our education department, where, by the way, Rick, sometimes the guards won't proctor the tests, so you don't get your college credit. I mean, it's a problem.
No, and this is one of those things where
it's not. Look, it's warehousing. Remember that. It's warehousing of people, and it's also punishment. It's not meant, you know, you don't come out of there unless you work it yourself with fellow inmates. You don't come out of there like, wow, that was productive. That's not what you do.
And this is one of those things where I'm actually hoping, you know, Marjorie Three Names and Go-Go Gohmert and the rest of them who are raising, you know, valid complaints. Look, the D.C. jail is bad. I find it interesting that who they're raising those concerns for. Because,
right,
as I said before, I guarantee every one of them at one point or another, you know, thought prison was a country club. But it's this kind of stuff that should never happen, especially to people who are vulnerable like these folks were.
Yes, and also, if somebody passes out and lays on the ground, and you go to assist them, remember, you will be put into solitary confinement for doing that until an investigation is held. So you have to choose if somebody is choking or passed out, do you let them alone or you try to help them? Because if you try to help them, what did you do to them? You go into solitary maybe 30 days, 60 days, you know, who knows how long. So there's a lot of problems internally, and I've just never really seen them addressed because people, you deserved crusty bread and water, you know, for 40 days.
It's disgraceful how we treat people. Disgraceful.
Oh, it is. Let me put it economically instead of human-wise, which, you know, this is a human factor, but let me put it economically. The recidivism rate is large because people aren't getting, you know, treatment in prison. They're not getting mental health treatment. They're warehoused and then sent back out. So the taxpayer is going to pay another $55,000 a year when they go back in.
Isn't that the point, though, with all of our for-profit prisons? Isn't that the point?
Well,
heads in beds.
That's a good point, too. Right.
Seems like the point to me. It's just a horrible tragedy, and maybe these lawsuits are going to bring some awareness to it. I guess I just don't have much hope in that vein either. But, Bob, I appreciate the stories. Thank you for breaking the wife. Look forward to talking to you again real soon.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good stuff, our good friend Bob Nay. Let's take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. There are some songs that stand at the core of the labor movement. Year after year, these songs ring out on picket lines, at labor rallies, and in union halls across the world. These songs inspire and build solidarity between workers. Undoubtedly, Which Side Are You On is one of those songs. On this day in labor history, the year was 1900. Today, we celebrate the birthday of Florence Reese, the author of Which Side Are You On's iconic labor lyrics. She was born in Tennessee, the daughter of a coal miner. During the 1930s, her husband Sam was an organizer for the United Mine Workers in Harlan County, Kentucky. In what came to be known as the Harlan County Wars, the battle for union recognition waged on for nearly a decade. Often, violent skirmishes broke out between striking miners and federal troops, and the mine owners hired guns. Legend has it that one fateful day in 1931, deputies were dispatched to kill Sam Reese. He escaped just in the nick of time. But Florence and her children were terrorized as the deputies illegally searched and ransacked their home. When the deputies left, an angry Florence ripped the calendar off the kitchen wall and on it wrote the lyrics to Which Side Are You On? Folk singer Pete Seeger heard the song, and in 1941, he recorded it with his group, the Almanac Singers. It entered into the lexicon of labor anthems. Then, in 1976, Florence appeared in the Oscar-winning documentary Harlan County, USA. The documentary told the story of a 1970s coal strike. In it, Florence sang her song, and the lyrics provided a powerful addition to the film. Since then, many more artists have covered versions of the song, including Annie DeFranco, Natalie Merchant, and this version by the Dropkick Murphys. Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So evidently NPR is no longer going to be posting anything on their 52 official Twitter accounts. When you label them as state-sponsored media, kind of like the Russians or the Chinese, are you surprised that NPR would say, take it and shove it up your behind? And as they said, look, you know, Twitter drives very little traffic to NPR. Most people, they say, don't use it. It's of very little benefit to them. And their quote, I found very interesting, that Twitter no longer has the public service relevance that it once had. And this is where, you know, I said this from the beginning. When I was quoted in Bloomberg, I said, look, you know, the little blue check mark used to mean a little bit of something. You knew that those people took what they were putting out somewhat seriously. News organizations would put things out. One of my favorite quotes from the uprising in Wisconsin in 2011, where kids were putting sheets up on the wall saying, thank you, CNN, for telling me what's on Twitter. Because it was real time. Now, the sad reality is so much bot action, so much trolling. It's crazy. And I've tried to get them to take my blue check away because I will never give him a freaking dime. But I find it interesting that Musk's response then was defund NPR. This attack back on NPR. I think we need national public radio. I think we need a voice that's somewhat down the middle. But that's not what the Musks of the world want. They want a dominant right-wing voice. They want a dominant voice that they control. And it's our job to ensure that there are multiple voices out there. I'm, as a working-class liberal, I want more speech, not less. I want more people, you know, sharing their thoughts, not less. And yet, you know, you look at Musk, who says, you know, owning Twitter has been quite painful. It's been a roller coaster, he said, but, you know, it's worth it. He said he'll sell the company if it comes along. I wonder how big of a loss he'd be willing to sell it for. Remember, he paid $44 billion. It's now worth about $20. Wonder if he'd lose the $24 billion to get rid of that egg. Anyway, if you missed any of today's program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Also, something I said got on your nerves, under your skin, I want to hear about it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266.